Podium Publishing presents Sacrifice, Book 4 of the Triss Moon Saga, written by Brian K. Fuller, read by Simon Vance. Chapter 70. Charade. For 3 days, Mikik's armies marched up the narrow road to Echo Hold. And for 3 days the armies of men slaughtered them almost without casualty. Only the powerful longbows of the Uyumark archers took some toll on the soldiers across the ravine, while their human counterparts devastated their enemies in return. Every new wave of creatures to ascend the mountain cast their dead comrades into the deep canyon, and the fresh Uyumark often found themselves pierced by a well-aimed shot, tumbling over the side and down to join the dead. The easy victories, low casualties, and balmy summer weather sent a surge of confidence through the ranks of besieged soldiers. Indeed, only the growing shortage of arrows to shoot at the reckless invaders concerned them. On the fourth day, Warlord Jarius of Ogmir extended the bridge across the ravine and sallied forth briefly to beat back a fresh wave of creatures and recover what few undamaged arrows they could find among the carnage. He returned, smile wide and face proud.
"I believe I could push this whole army back down the mountain in a day," he bragged.
Those with no sense of history took pleasure in what seemed more like sport than warfare, while the smiles of those with more lore never reached their eyes as unsettling stories of the past preoccupied their minds with dark speculation. Mikik had more than Uyumark at his command, and he had more intelligence than to just throw away Uyumark in droves day after day. The tales of the first and second Mikikian wars held but few mentions of victory, and what victories there were cost plenty in blood and sacrifice. Lord and Lady Cairn, safe within the keep, had little to occupy them during the long days of battle. Aethon encouraged Shertan to practice with the sword every day, though the nervous king could rarely stop fidgeting and pacing long enough to work up a serious will to accomplish anything. Dread cast his features into wrinkled contortions, and his muttered phrases of self-deprecation, uttered in long dialogues with himself, set the Shalane to worrying. Aethon's discipline allowed him to present a calm demeanour, but the Shalane could pick out the little habits that revealed the churchman's concern. She wondered if his thumb had a fingernail left at all. What hope the Shalane held to sprang from her protruding, uncomfortable belly. She felt like an engorged pumpkin propped up on two twigs, but the baby's pronounced and sometimes painful movements always brightened her heart, whatever the cost to her back. She wanted to believe herself a beautiful, pregnant woman, but the giant lump of her belly destroyed whatever grace she could lay claim to. She mostly laughed at her awkwardness, realizing it signaled the end of one journey and hopefully the start of a better. She rarely spent time with anyone other than Shertan and Aethon, and their thoughts rarely wandered from the potential doom that awaited at Mikik's hand. Only her shy, though capable handmaiden, handpicked by Aethon to replace Mina, offered the occasional ray of excitement and cheer, although even that was subdued. Her mother and Jen, she knew, waited somewhere outside of Echo Hold, and she dearly wished for their company and fretted that outside the protective walls more sinister danger might befall them. "Soon," she thought, "soon this will all be over, one way or another." A tightening across her belly ended all purposeful thought and clenched her jaw. The contractions had come with increasing frequency and pain all morning. She exhaled sharply as the tension increased. Shertan, however, did not break from his pacing or even look up, despite her increasingly obvious distress. Their wide room on the second floor of the keep provided an ample track for her husband to traverse in the throes of his anxiety. Sometimes he would slide the sword from his scabbard and thrust it weakly about, and the Shalane had to bite her lip to keep herself from critiquing his every move. She understood why Samian spent so much time teaching her to draw a sword and move about with it. Every time Shertan unsheathed the sword, he seemed like a blacksmith's new apprentice, staring at some strange implement pulled from an unfamiliar bag. Her husband needed confidence, and the Shalane could think of no way to lend it to him, especially considering her own doubts. Even with Jen at her side, she doubted she would face birthing the child and confronting Mikik with any degree of calm. At least she trusted Jen's ability and loyalty. As it was, she suspected that at the first sign of Mikik's presence, she would only catch sight of Shertan sprinting in terror off into the distance just moments before the evil god annihilated them all. Another tightening came and she gritted her teeth. Is it really going to hurt this badly? This time a grunt escaped her lips and Shertan did turn, face screwing up into a question before he sheathed his sword on the second try. She breathed deeply and quickly until the contraction passed.
Are you all right?
Shertan asked, not stepping closer but staring at her as if she had the plague. The Shalane felt a sudden wetness.
Get Ethan!
She yelled. Shertan scurried out of the room as if death dogged his heels.
What is Mikik up to?
Thorbrand wondered aloud as he, Jen, and Falael lay on a precipice overlooking Echo Hold. They had split from Mirel's army nearly a week before and scrambled into the mountains to watch Mikik's host as they assaulted the mighty fortress. They hiked a goat track to the cliff that dropped nearly 200 feet to the road below. In their packs, they carried the cloaks of the elves with them and waited for the time when they would be able to drop from the cliff and strike.
And why does Jarius keep shooting at them?
Thorbrand continued.
Let them waste their arrows and starve for Eldaroth's sake. I imagine they would start jumping over the edge out of sheer boredom. I know I've thought about it several times just sitting here.
Jen shook his head. He joined Thorbrand in his puzzlement over Mikik's strategy, or lack thereof. History told that Mikik never marched with his armies, preferring to scheme and plot in the shadows and let his underlings do the work and take the risks. Whomever he sent to command the armies below certainly cared nothing for the piles of Uyumak stacking up on the canyon floor, nor possessed any sort of military creativity. But the more he thought about it, the more it nagged Jen. In the first two Mikikian wars, the Dark God had sent creatures of flight, giant birds of prey, swarms of needling and poisonous insects, and soaring dog-sized lizards with wide mouths and sharp teeth. None had come this time. No magicians sent lightning or hail or wind to harry the enemy archers or to strike at the carefree soldiers manning powerful ballistae and devastating trebuchets that tore avenues of slaughter down the ranks of Uyumak advancing up the mountainside. The three spectators conjectured that perhaps the short time since Trismoon's return had prevented Mikik from creating or breeding a significant force of creatures. But if that were the case, then why waste what army he had pounding away at a nearly impregnable castle? And if he had used magicians against them during the journey to Elder Lurimora to skew the weather, why not do so now? A good lightning storm over Echo Hold would likely kill more soldiers in a few minutes than the Uyumak had in nearly 4 days. Still, however perplexing the battle below, each day that passed brought them closer to Eldaloth's advent and what prophecy outlined as the final drama. With any luck, the Shalane would give birth within the safe confines of Echo Hold and never see Mikik's face. With a larger helping of luck, Shertan's participation in events wouldn't doom them all to a lifetime of futile war against a mad god.
This is the final chapter, Jen thought. I will see the Shalane and Mirel again, and be content.
He found that he felt more for a rekindling of that joy than for any other good that could come from Eldaloth's return. After watching Jarius lead another attack across the retractable bridge, Jen returned to their meagre camp. The rocky, steep inclines of the Far Reach Mountains challenged their climbing skills in their journey to reach their lofty overlook. Their cramped camp on a slightly sloping space between two granite outcroppings provided little more than a place to stow their gear and sleep, with a minimal chance of their rolling off the mountainside. Jen took up his water skin and reclined, sensing another of the Shalane's frequent contractions. They had started earlier that day and steadily increased in frequency and duration. Now they came almost unrelentingly.
Time is short. Eldaloth comes.
After a few more minutes, the pain coming from the Shalane escalated, and he stood, feeling the need to do something and finding nothing more than a short prayer to offer. Jen waited in the shadow of an upthrust rock, trying to get out of the afternoon sun. The low booming of distant drums caught his attention just as Torbrand scrambled down the rocky track to meet him.
"I think the time may have come at last, Thangeldoloth,"
Torbrand announced, wild excitement in his eyes.
"We'd better gear up. How is the Shalane?"
"I think the baby is coming."
"I think Mikik is,"
Torbrand grinned.
"At last, some fun. Eldoloth better leave a few heads to chop. He will, won't he?"
Jen shook his head, though he had expected his former master to be excited for all the wrong reasons. As quickly as they could, they donned their armour, Jen wearing the black and silver banded mail of the elves, while Torbrand donned his black and gold breastplate and greaves. Carrying all the weight of the armour up the mountain had nearly broken them both.
"Do not forget the cloak,"
Jen admonished his enthusiastic companion, who had already started back up the hill.
"Oh, yes. Are you sure this cloak does what you say it will?"
"Yes. If it doesn't, you really won't have a chance to get angry at me."
The booming continued to mount, reverberating through the canyon and off the walls of Echo Hold. Jen and Torbrand reached the top, laying on their bellies and following Falael's eyes down the canyon road. Jen had to push the Shalane's spectacular pain out of his mind to focus on the procession below. At first, only Mor Uyumak ascended the road, but as the pounding drums grew louder, the gasps and oaths from Echo Hold's soldiers mixed in with the cacophony.
"What do they see?"
Torbrand asked of no one in particular. A few moments later, what the men of the castle saw rounded the corner. Uyumak warriors, some pounding massive skin-covered drums, surrounded a hideous figure, sitting on an oversized throne of burned wood bolted to a simple platform. Severed human heads, spiked into the wood through the temples, formed a border around the sides of the platform, the dark wood wet with blood. Two gagons hauled the contraption up the mountain road. The gagons stood a full 15 feet tall, and were covered in a thick, scaly hide the colour of dried mud. They walked hunched over, but their stout necks could telescope 5 feet long, letting the flat, snake-like head whip around unpredictably. Deep brows protected beady eyes embedded on the sides of a head that consisted mostly of thick bone and teeth. The hideous rider slumping forward on the throne extinguished all the cheer and excitement that had built up during the preceding day's easy victories. In form, the creature was like the Milim Eri Jen had seen before, only twisted almost beyond recognition. Oozing pustules covered a skin that seemed to have been burned to black and then stretched over the hulking frame, angry red cracks crisscrossing everywhere to form islands of leathery flesh. Ebony earrings, 3 to an ear, swayed with the motion of the two gagons. Only a loincloth adorned the naked frame, while a cloud of buzzing flies enveloped the dark passenger, feeding on the blood and pus, and casting a shadow about the throne. The bald head swiveled to take in everything around it. Empty eye sockets, filled with maggots and coalescing flies, formed eerie eyes which scanned the fortress and canyon. A stench and feeling of dread clung about the creature, and even the nearby Uyumak it passed shrank from it. Archers, trebuchets, and ballistae all let loose at once, but the veritable wall of projectiles simply evaporated into the summer air. The gagons continued forward until they stood at the platform landing, Jarius calling a halt to the vain bombardment. Jen turned toward Torbrand and Falael, eyes widening. Both lay unconscious on the ground. A tingling sensation flooded Jen's body, and in a moment he lost a familiar connection. He could no longer sense the power of Triss. Startled, he rolled over. Two figures floated just behind him, and in an instant all strength left him. Joran, young and beautiful, smiled at him. The other figure, tall, dressed in white and looking commanding, regarded him coldly, but not without satisfaction. Recognition pierced Jen's mind. Here stood Eldoloth's murderer, the progenitor of horror and death, and his creator. Unlike the creature below, Mikik radiated beauty, though his person held no glory or brilliancy.
"What do you think of my creation down there, Jen?"
Joran asked teasingly.
"At first I thought the heads spiked on the platform a bit much, but now that I see their effect, there can be no doubt that my first inclination was correct. The flies and pus are a nice touch, don't you agree? Everything horrible the simple race of men imagined Mikik would be. I thought I would have him sit on a throne of bodies, but—"
"Enough, Joran,"
Mikik commanded, voice deep and inviting.
"Read him."
Jen pushed against Joran's intrusion into his well-travelled mind, but her power battered away every defence he could throw against it, as it had before. Once done, she turned to Mikik, and he absorbed the information without expression.
"As you are aware,"
Mikik continued,
"I have stripped you of your power. You are nothing now. As a gift to you for your service in my behalf, I leave you your life, such as it is. You have played your part well."
"And have a part yet to play,"
Joran added. Confusion and helplessness rose within him. Had Mikik really intended for him to do all that he had done? Had he duped the Millimeri? The Shalane's pain spiked for several long moments, and Jen could focus on nothing more. At last it faded, and Mikik flinched, pulling back slightly and snarling.
"He is born,"
the Dark God intoned gravely.
"Do you think you can unmake him?" Joran asked.
"I might, but I cannot approach the creature. Its cries sear me like summer fire. The blood is much stronger than it should be, and I cannot come near it."
His troubled face relaxed after a moment, though doubt left a residue in his eyes.
"It is nearly time. Let the parley begin."
Joran floated to Jen.
"You'll appreciate the theatricality. Watch."
With a wave of her hand, she flipped him over and scooted his body forward until his head hung over the precipice. The two warring armies remained at a stalemate in the afternoon heat, an uncomfortable silence born of awe and terror radiating from the fighters of Echo Hold. Joran concentrated and incanted softly. A monstrosity hauled itself from the throne and stood at the precipice of the canyon, regarding the castle with a lazy disdain.
"God is born!"
The cry rose from a single voice three times, and then swelled as voice upon voice bore it up until it reverberated through the canyon. Soldiers' faces beamed anew with hope, and handshakes and hugs of congratulations replaced the cowering of moments before.
"Wake up, you fools!" Jen thought.
With all his might, he struggled against the spell that trapped him to the ground, Joran chuckling at his attempts.
"Not yet, Jen. Soon."
The monstrosity raised its arms, and dark clouds gathered about the base of the elevated castle, electricity crackling.
"Hear me!"
it bellowed, voice like black, boiling pitch poured into the air, so loud that every motion halted on both sides of the canyon.
"Your revelry is in vain, worthless dogs of weak blood. Your race is a blight. Open your gates, and perhaps I will let the women escape the Uyumak cook pots."
"We will not open to you,"
Warlord Jarius shouted confidently from the walls above the gate.
"Our god will find you, and you will end."
Jen could just make out Aethon standing exultantly at the warlord's side. Lightning erupted from the clouds, and at least 20 burned men plummeted from the battlements.
"I will slay you,"
the monstrosity said.
"I will slay your god as I have before."
"You will not,"
Aethon countered defiantly.
"For here rules the Har-Ulric, one who holds the power of Eldaloth and your undoing. He comes to meet you and send you to your destruction. God is born, and you will soon be an unpleasant memory."
The creature waited a few moments before a laugh pulled out of the abyss tore from its throat. Joran crouched by Jen.
"Your performance is almost ready to begin."
The creature laughed what seemed like hours, pulling down smiles and unpinning knees.
"Do you think," it finally said, "do you think I came here in ignorance? I know well what I face."
The impostor, Mikik, reached backward, and Jen felt himself yanked from the overhang and pulled downward toward the clawed, outstretched hand. It caught him by the back of the cloak, lifting him high. Jen, paralyzed, slumped like a freshly killed corpse. The soldiers gasped and murmured.
"Yes," the counterfeit hissed. "Yes. You know my servant. Do I not know that your Ulrich is a coward? That his magic and his mind are weak? Do I not know that he trembles even now to face me? He is no king. Any one of the men on the walls has more metal than he. Bring him forth. Extend the bridge. Prophecy says he must face me. So let's see if he can steady his shaky legs enough to walk out to see my face. Let's see how your faith fares when I turn him to ash. As for this one," it continued, indicating Jen, "he has done his work well and shall have a throne for his service."
A powerful force flung Jen backward. He landed hard on the engulfing chair on the platform, an unseen hand pinning him up straight. Tears flooded his eyes. Mikik had won. They could not match him, and the Shalane would die. No one could see the truth. And even if he were freed, no one would believe him any more. Only the healing power of Padre Nolan and the virtue of the training stones allowed the Shalane to shuffle forward next to her husband so soon after the birth of her perfect child. She wanted to hide away from the world and pull her son to her breast, to stroke his smooth, peaceful face and sing to him. A soft glow surrounded his tiny body, a glow that invited reverence and awe. But almost no sooner than the midwife had placed the tiny infant in her arms did she hear the first grating demands of her enemy. Only the Padre's steady magic kept Shatan from diving under the bed. Minutes later they stood on the street as the retinue of Padres and soldiers surrounded them. Athan and Warlord Jarius joined the group last, Jarius and his Ogmerian soldiers in lead, and Athan coming to stand by Shatan. Dacen joined them. While not permitted to be her personal guard, Athan had allowed Dacen to serve in Echo Hold after he took an oath of fealty to Shatan. He squeezed the Shalane's shoulder from behind, and the Shalane thanked him for it. "I'll take it from here, Nolan, thank you," Athan said. "Jarius, do not move until I tell you. Padres, this is the time. Raise your wards. Guard the Shalane and Shatan at all costs. We must get the Ha'ulrich near enough Mikik for him to strike the final blow. Shalane, take Shatan's hand." The Shalane shifted the sleeping Eldaloth to her left arm and took Shatan's clammy hand in her right hand. He placed his remaining hand on his sword hilt, clenching it to steady his trembling. Athan incanted, and Shatan straightened. Unexpectedly, Athan turned toward her. "You should know, Shalane, that Mikik has Jen. You will see him when the gate rises. I am sorry. It seems Mikik did use him as I feared." The Shalane's mouth fell open, and her heart sank. "Faith," she told herself, "it will be over soon. Justice will come." She focused on her child, a deep, unexplainable love for and attachment to the infant filling her heart with purpose and hope. "Have them extend the bridge, Jarius," Athan ordered.
"Extend the bridge," the warlord yelled,
the baby's eyes fluttering at the harsh sound. Grating and rumbling filled the air, scaring away scavenger birds and silencing the men on the wall. A thud and sudden silence signalled the end of the platform's traverse, and the Shalane looked up, finding that the soldiers of Echo Hold had formed a line around them, kneeling in prayer.
"Open the gate," Jarius ordered.
It rose too quickly for the Shalane, and she could feel her husband's shaking despite Athan's stealing magic. Chetan nearly fell down upon first seeing his enemy, and the Shalane gasped. This was not the Mikik who Aldemar had shown her in vision. What has happened? A curse, surely, had stricken Mikik for his crimes, and the Shalane wondered at how such a horror had befallen a being once so mighty and glorious. As they marched resolutely forward, she could just make out Jen sitting on a dark throne behind Mikik.
"Deafen him, Nolan," Aethon whispered.
Nolan nodded, and Chetan looked around in surprise at his sudden loss of hearing.
"Is this him?"
Mikik mocked, and the Shalane understood Aethon's precaution. The Shalane wanted to turn and run.
"And with his lap dogs all around. Come, I will meet you halfway."
"Hold fast to him, Shalane," Aethon said urgently. "Your healing touch will keep him alive until he is close enough. Faith, child, faith."
Mikik walked casually forward, unaccompanied by any of his army. Clouds of flies swirled around the bridge, and the Shalane swallowed hard, pulling her son close. The baby slept calmly, cradled in her arm, but as they neared Mikik, she practically had to drag Chetan forward. Mikik said,
"Let's peel away your vanguard so I can get a look at you."
Warlord Jarius, his 20 soldiers and their equipment turned to glass, forward momentum toppling them to the bridge road, chunks shattering away from the impact and into the clouded canyon below. The procession stopped.
"Now let's away with meddling churchmen and their pathetic wards."
"It's gone!" Nolan exclaimed. "They're all gone! We are nothing!"
Mikik stood 20 feet away. Chetan's hand nearly crushed the Shalane's. Aethon remained rooted and pale.
"Nolan," he said, voice barely controlled, "get the Padres inside the walls. You are of no use here."
Powerless, the Council of Padres turned and sprinted back inside the gate while Mikik laughed.
"That's better. Come, Ulrich, come and know your enemy."
The Shalane could barely control her shaking, and Aethon sweated with the exertion of his steadying magic. The Padre gently pushed Chetan forward, glass crunching underfoot. Mikik's stench overwhelmed them as they approached, and as they neared, a swarm of flies poured from his eye sockets and swirled around them for a few moments before buzzing back inside his head.
"Now I see," Mikik rumbled. "It is time for you to die, Ulrich. You, your woman, and your child. It is time for me to sit upon the throne of Elder Lurimora and rule this world."
"Now, Chetan," Aethon yelled.
But Chetan did nothing, staring everywhere but at Mikik, who laughed uproariously.
"Goodbye, churchman,"
Mikik flicked his hand, and Aethon skidded backward through the broken glass until he lay at the gates, bleeding and unmoving.
"Goodbye, protector,"
the Shalane shrieked as Dacen suffered the same fate, armor clanging as he skidded along the stone. Chetan now knelt, crying on the stones as Mikik moved toward him, mocking him.
"And now for you, Ulrich."
"Chetan," the Shalane yelled, "do this! You can! You can!"
Suddenly, Chetan's eyes went vacant, and his face slack. He stood quickly and drew his sword stiffly like a puppet.
"Do you think swords are any good here?"
Mikik thundered. Chetan stepped forward and thrust his sword into the thigh of the creature. Mikik bellowed, an orange light glowing from the cracks in his burned skin.
"Impossible!"
Mikik screamed. Racked and clenched, he writhed in agony and then exploded in a shower of ash, fire, and flesh. The blast flung Chetan and the Shalane backward, and she lost hold of her child. She lay dazed and senseless, for how long she could not guess. Vaguely she heard cheers as if from a great distance. A light gathered around her, but she could only think of her child. Frantically, she felt around herself light and smoke obscuring her vision.
"Milady!"
It was Dacen. He grabbed her arm and pulled her upright.
"No!" she yelled. "Eldaloth, my child!"
Wait,
something is happening, Dacen said, grabbing her head gently and tilting it upward. It's wondrous. The Shalane ignored him as the light gathered, searching the ground for the baby. Finally she found the blanket and the tiny clothes, but the child was missing. In despair she cast around, finding Dacen staring just ahead of them. A being, shining and splendorous, hovered over Shertan, descending and landing just in front of him. So bright was the glory of him that the Shalane could hardly keep her eyes on him.
"Rise, my servant," he said, voice reassuring and kind. "I am Eldaloth. You are victorious. You have saved the world. I have returned, and you will have a great reward. You shall have the peace of the faithful."
Something struck the Shalane as familiar about the voice, and she pressed forward. It's over, she thought, hope surging through her veins. We did it. Aethon was right.
My servant, the Shalane, Eldaloth said.
She stumbled forward eagerly, tears coming to her eyes. At last she would see her god. At last she would be free of the burden she had carried for so many years. At last she could rest. She lifted her veil and examined the countenance of the one she had sacrificed so much to bring back to the world. But when she finally saw his luminous features clearly, her world fell out from under her. His face she knew. The voice she could now identify. Aldemar's vision had shown her this god, and he was not Eldaloth. Reeling, she let her veil drop, peering past Mikik to find Jen. The two Gagons near the throne and the rest of the Uyumak were fleeing back down the mountain, leaving her protector motionless, eyes bulging on the throne.
"Come to me, Jen," she willed in her distress.
His face was distorted with struggle, but something pinned him to his seat.
"Hear me, all the ends of Kihol," Mikik called, luxurious voice filling the air with its assured tones. "For these I have reserved a throne in the paradise of Erelindar. By their deeds they have shown themselves worthy of a much greater glory than this simple realm. To them I impart a gift I wish to give all, transcendence and peace. The legend of the Ha'ulric and the Shalane shall live forever on the lips of the men and women here this day. Their names will be holy. They will never be forgotten. Continue your oblations. Stand, Shertan. Stand, Shalane. Today is your victory."
Shertan took her hand and turned toward Echo Hold to receive the adulation of the survivors.
"I did it," he told her,
confidence and contentment blooming on his face for the first time in months, as the praise and adoration washed over him.
"At the end, it's as if something took over, and I did it."
The Shalane didn't answer, swallowing hard, frozen in panic.
"Shalane?"
Shertan questioned, perplexed by her demeanor. But the Shalane just squeezed his hand and answered nothing. The jubilation died down, and Mikik spoke.
"Shertan, will you enter into the rest I offer you?"
Shertan closed his eyes.
"Yes, my master and my god."
Mikik stretched forth his hands, a light gathering around her husband before he dissolved into thin air, to the amazement and delight of the onlooking soldiers. The Shalane stepped backward, fearful and uncertain. Dacen, standing proudly behind her, whispered,
"Take me with you."
"Shalane, will you enter into your rest?" Mikik invited, voice affectionate and kind.
"What have you done with my child?"
she managed to squeak, barely loud enough for herself to hear. She could just detect the barest twitch of Mikik's brow and a brief hesitancy. But she knew all too well that she had failed. And now she was finished.